Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Thursday, June 3rd, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and learning some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye, you'd have to scroll down a bit on the new website to find that, but there's a link in the upper left-hand corner that says Start Here. Click on that. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. It's a tool I've used for 17 years now, over 17 years, to improve the quality of my life and relationships and effectively turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of that infallible guidance system that we've all been given. You can also download a host of other tools there, but primarily, you can download that tool itself. It's a PDF file. Click on it. Download it for free. Print it off. Use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will give you access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope you do that soon and often, because that will most likely give you comments, questions, or maybe you want to get some support in actually working through a worksheet. That's why we're here, 2 hours a day in our current format, 5 days a week. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 563-999-3581. Alternatively, if you're listening to this through the archives, you can send us an email. You can send an email to Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And or you can send me an email, tjh at mindshifters-academy.org. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. This is the 154th day of the year. Today's lesson is, I am among the ministers of God. And again, the commentary is 14 or 15 paragraphs long, so I'm not going to read the whole thing because that's available for anybody, even free online, if you go to acim.org. And type in lesson 154, it'll take you, we can read this whole thing. But the commentary here reads, let us today be neither arrogant nor falsely humble. When we are reminding ourselves that we are a minister of God, let's not be foolish, let's not be falsely humble, and let's not get full of ourselves. The fact of the matter is, someone or something created us. We have this existence. And as the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery talk about over and over again, what we do with our life is our choice. And if we choose only love, we choose to act in loving ways, then we teach only love. And it goes on to say here that, you know, whatever your appointed role might be, it's far bigger and it's contained in a far larger system than your conscious logical mind will ever be able to comprehend, much less even to even perceive, much less comprehend it. So rather than think you know what your role is here, great spiritual teachings for a lot of years have said, just focus on the positive. Just identify your true nature and then extend that to others. So if I'm going to acknowledge that there is this impulse for life and creativity and love within me, and then I get busy extending that in every interaction I have with everyone and everything, it's going to have positive ripple effects that go way beyond anything my conscious logical mind could ever track. So in this lesson, we're taught that the messenger isn't the one who writes the message and doesn't decide who it's going to get delivered to. So in this lesson, it encourages us to think our purpose is to read the message of love that is implanted in us and then simply extend that to everyone and everything we interact with. And as we do that, if we're willing to do that, we get the benefits. We get the benefits directly within our individual energy system, and then we get the benefits because the world we're living in improves. And as we teach, as we send the message out, we get the benefit of it. And of course, it's the opposite of a zero-sum game, where if I have $100 and I give away $90, I'm only left with 10. Because there were only 100 to begin with. But in this arena, where we're talking about energy, when we're talking about the creative energy, the energy of life, the energy of love, as some would call it, it works very differently. The more I give it, the more I feel it, the more I have it in my life. The more I give away, the more it comes back to me. So, let us but learn this lesson for today. We will not recognize what we receive until we've given it away. You've heard this said 100 different ways, 100 different times, and yet your belief is still lacking. But this is sure. Until a belief is given it, until you believe in it and you give it and experience it, you can't know how much it's going to bless you to pass along the message of creation, of love. So our lesson for today is thus stated thus. I am among the ministers of God, of the creation, of love, and I am grateful that I have this means by which to recognize that I am free. The world recedes as we light up our minds and realize these holy words are true. This is the message sent to us from our Creator today. Now we demonstrate how these messages have changed our minds about ourselves and what our function is. For as we prove that we accept no will that we do not share, our many gifts from the Creator will spring to our sight and leap into our hands, and we will recognize what we have received only as we give it away. So lesson 154 from the Course in Miracles experiment by Pam Grout. She titles it, A Loving Gift of Freedom to the World. She quotes Esther Hicks as saying, there's no such thing as a moment that isn't rich with treasures. Pam writes, say what? Lesson 154, I'm among the ministers of Source. This has to be a big mistake, right? How am I, this perpetually insecure human being, supposed to offer assistance or a message of hope to others? I sometimes have trouble getting out of bed. This lesson says that voice is the ego, swaying to its old familiar beat. Rather than join in like I used to, the Course tells me to call on my holy spokesperson. This holy spokesperson knows my appointed role and knows how to fulfill it. I like to think of Hobson, the hilarious butler who took care of Dudley Moore in the 1981 movie Arthur. This role was deftly performed by John Gielgud. Hobson loved his irresponsible charge with an open heart, no matter what ridiculous, immature thing he did. All Arthur had to do was ring a little silver bell. The Course tells me that my own personal Hobson, also known as the Holy Spirit, will always, without fail, be available. Always, always, always. So whenever I notice my mind settling into a problem state or forgetting to be grateful or worrying about anything at all, I just stop, think of Hobson or the Holy Spirit, and ring the silver bell. So, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. We have 47 minutes left. Plenty of time for a question, a comment, an answer, a soliloquy, a topic that you'd like us to explore. Today is a Thursday, so that means tonight we have a support group that's available through Zoom. Anywhere you have an internet connection, if you'd like to join us or you know somebody who would like to join us, all the information about that, it's available free, is at mindshifters-academy.org, or you could get there with mindshiftersacademy.org. If you're sending an email to tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, you need the hyphen in there. So how can we support you today? What's on your mind? How many different ways has your life blessed those around you that you're not even aware of? And how could it be that your life and your choices bless people and you not even be aware of it? Your very presence in life is evidence of the miracle of life expressing. And that all happens despite the fact that your conscious logical mind can't comprehend it and can't even hold all of the evidence to that truth. So how is it that your very existence is a blessing to life and a miracle? It's life expressing in form. It's the creative energy expressing in form. Some would call it love. Some would call it God. How is it that that happens and you can't even comprehend it? Well, it happens that way because that conscious logical mind that we are so dutifully trained to believe is our savior, is our master, is really not our savior or master at all. It really is, was always intended to be just a faithful servant. And in some great spiritual teachings, they remind us, pardon the phrase, but your conscious logical mind was intended to be a very stupid servant. It was never designed to be your master or to map out your course in life. It's there to serve, to be of service to the higher self. One of the ways Michael Rice has made sense of this, he's talking from an ancient scriptural passage that says, "The eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep shall your darkness become?" Well, with the information that he had access to from the transcripts of the Kabor's manuscript and the translation interpretation work that was done by his team of experts, a way to make sense of that in the English language is to say that your perceptual mind, this conscious logical mind, and the input from your senses was designed to help you navigate through this earthly life without walking into open manholes or bumping into trees. And yet, there's any hostility or fear in your mind, any negative emotional state in your mind, that's what was referred to as darkness. It means your lights are out, you're not perceiving accurately. And so before acting, if there's any hostility or fear in your mind, the only way for you to move forward in a healthy way is to restore yourself to calm prior to acting or speaking. So area code 910, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hey, Dr. Tim, it's Jill from Wilmington.
Hello, Jill. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. I wanted to call your intro reminded me of something that just happened this morning, and I was thinking about calling anyway, but it's kind of on topic. Your voice, I heard your voice in my head today tell me something, and it shifted my whole outlook and emotional state. Yesterday, I got some news that was very disappointing to me, and it was still bothering me this morning, and I was just kind of ill and grumpy, and I wanted to blame my son for talking too much or, you know, all the things we do that aren't true. And I came home and I was just kind of sitting with it, and then I heard you say, I think this is you. I didn't really recognize your voice at first, but you said, "What am I making this mean?" Is that something you say? Is that your
I say that quite often. Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Okay. And the minute that that popped into my head, I saw what was underneath my upset. And I saw all of the extra projections that I was putting on this piece of information that I got and what I was making it mean, which was really big. And yes, it had me upset, but it's also made up because I don't know if it actually means that. So I wanted to share that. Because it helped me. I knew that there was more underneath my surface, and it helped me dig into that. And you may not know that your voice lives in my head, and it's a good thing. You know, these impacts that we have on people that we don't even know about. So I wanted to mention that to you, that and to anyone listening, that it's very helpful to ask that question, to get outside of the little hamster wheel story and see the bigger truth, or truth as I perceive it, maybe I should say.
Well, and that's a wonderful example. That's why it's one of my two favorite questions. The first one is, if I have any recognition that I am triggered to any kind of upset, tension, frustration, anger, sadness, hurt, whatever, I like to take one of those nice, full, deep breaths, hold it at the top for a couple counts, and then fully resist the exhale. So it's a nice, long, slow exhale, because that sets my body to relaxing. It triggers that parasympathetic response, takes me out of any stress response or any fight or flight or freeze response. And then when I do that, I turn the focus inside and I ask myself these two questions alternately. Number one, how am I creating this negative emotion? And number two, what am I making this situation mean? Because it's only by the interpretation I choose and place on life events that I create any emotional response at all. Right? It's the thoughts that are contained in the interpretation that I choose, which, if I pour enough of my mind energy into them, actually generate the emotions I experience, and nothing else creates my emotions. So I'm glad that was useful for you. They continue to be highly productive questions in my life.
Yeah, it was. I struggle a little bit with the, so in my mind, I know, like, if I'm feeling off, if I have a negative emotion, that it's triggered by something in me. But I have a difficulty still with even wanting to let go of the negative emotion, quite honestly. Sometimes I want to keep it for whatever silly reason. Today, I didn't at all. Like, I did not like where I was and how I felt, and I was kind of desperate to get out of there, and really, initially, desperately, like, trying to look for the cause. You know, like I said, it's my son. It's the state of society. It's this, it's that. And nothing was fitting. Nothing really soothed that agitation that I had. And thank goodness your voice piped up and asked me that question. And it was the question that I needed to ask. What am I making this mean? And then there really was so much underneath it that I could really immediately also notice that was untrue, that was just my my projections into the wreckage of my future. It was very helpful.
I'm glad to hear it. And, of course, there are just layers upon layers of how a key thought like that can be so helpful. And the one that we're going for at the primary level is, I'm trying, every time I use a question like that, I'm trying to help myself become aware of the negative conditioning,
mm-hmm.
which was that, you know, the world is creating my upset, this is happening to me, et cetera, and program a positive direct observation, which is, I'm creating this. So, you know, either how am I creating this emotion, or what am I creating as a meaning for this situation? Either one puts me back in the role of co-creator of this experience that I'm having.
Yeah.
And that's what I need to do to be a little bit more accurately observing. I need to understand this isn't happening to me in a vacuum. Right? I have a big part in every emotion that I experience. And I may not be consciously creating it, but I'm definitely creating it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's very helpful to think about, the co-creating piece, because, again, it's always so confusing. Like, why would I choose to co-create misery? Even though I know, I've been doing this long enough, like, I know that's true. That just is a truth. But I also struggle, like, with that whole thing. Those positive unconscious beliefs or whatever, just kind of running the program without me knowing about it, is that's how I'm co-creating it. And I can't change them until I know what they are. Well, I also saw a compulsive behavior of not only wanting to blame other people, but also looking outside of me to make me feel better. Like, who do I need to talk to? This person, which then sets me up for the person to fail me, quote, because they can't fix what's inside of me because it's inside of me. Or, you know, grabbing for something sugary, or, you know, like, it really was a very interesting observation to see me being so compulsive at the same, as I'm also, you know, wallowing in my upset.
That's a wonderful catch. You know, the the thing I was going to point out is that the trap of asking why. That's part of that, you know, gateway drug that Michael Rice talks about, where you are trying to figure things out. And we want people to be in a questioning state, but we want them to be asking to be shown, not to be figuring it out. So, you know, if I'm going to ask a question, I'm probably better off asking what, like, what am I making this mean?
Yeah.
And or how is this choice affecting me, rather than asking why am I making this choice? Because that puts me into this idea where I'm going to have some conscious, logical understanding. And that isn't necessary, right? I don't need to understand all of the dynamics within my physiology that generate the pain that I experience once I hit myself in the side of the head with a hammer. I just need to understand that when I hit myself in the side of the head with a hammer, that's connected to the pain I'm feeling. I don't need to know all the dynamics of the nerve receptors that send the signal to my brain, et cetera, and how if I'm hypnotized the right way, I won't feel it. And I don't need to know all of that. I just need to see the connection. So asking why is not anywhere near as productive as asking how or what and asking to be shown. So I'm stepping outside of the conscious logical mind, putting it aside for now, and opening up to some higher integrated wisdom to give me an insight, to give me some shift in energy, even if the conscious logical insight isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, if I have a, like, you did most of this automatically today when it came to you to ask, what are you making this mean? But if you have somebody like Byron Katie's work and you've got that worksheet with you, or you just remember some of the aspects of that worksheet, you ask yourself, okay, this is what I'm making this mean. Is this true? Can I absolutely know that this is true? What if the opposite of this is really true? And if I just start questioning those things, it often leads to a shift in perception that is liberating.
Yes. You're right. I did it automatically. It was pretty, I pretty quickly saw, like, that the belief that was, or the assumption or whatever that was operating underneath it, was a creation of my imagination and not true. Because there are some other core beliefs that I'm working on now that I need to actively poke holes in them. And I wonder if the automatic, you know, I think this is somewhat related to these core beliefs, and, you know, it's encouraging to notice that I saw all this stuff and I had a much more healthy response than I might have had prior to picking up this work, which I've been doing for I don't know how many years, but those are very helpful questions to keep on going. Once, you know, I've asked the question, what am I making this mean, for example. And just going back to this why question, that is a question I need to probably eliminate from my vocabulary. It is a definite trap for me. I think if I figure out why, then I can take it apart, but that's a dead end.
Yeah, it's not what happens. How many times have you come up with reasons why, and then you still do it? And so better, you know, what, how and what are better questions, right?
Yeah.
And how does it feel when I do this, and what's the effect of my doing this? And if the effect is negative, it doesn't matter how many good reasons I have intellectually or logically for doing it. if the effects aren't good, I just want to try something else.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is we're so conditioned in our culture to think and rely heavily. I was talking about this earlier with the idea of making my conscious logical mind the driver of the bus or the master. And we're conditioned to crave being right or to think that our survival, physically even emotionally, is tied to being right. If we get it wrong, we're going to be punished. And a lot of us grew up in families where we thought if we did something wrong, that's why we were getting hit or punished. And so we have this mental emotional connection that says we better be right in order to survive. We better get people to agree with us that we're right in order to survive. And if we can't, we might get into fist fights with them, right? We might get into road rage incidents. And there's just an insanity in that. You know, this addiction to being right or this compulsion to be right. And it's a huge trap. So better, different teachers talk about it different ways. Guy Finley talks about being in relationship with rightness and asking to be shown rather than clinging to your I'm right. And that's why the God response is so useful. I've given a number of talks on the God response. What's the God response? Okay. You want to be depressed? Okay. You want to use your conscious logical mind energy, your creative energy, to focus on negative things and then create a negative impact in your life? Okay. You have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness. This is part of the creative process. Every human being has the infinite capacity to choose the focus of their conscious awareness. So you have a right. You have the ability to focus on the negatives constantly, to take what many other people would look at as a positive and turn it into a negative. That's your right. And the creator, once having given you that free will, isn't going to step in and say, no, no, Tim, you're hurting yourself with that. Change your thoughts. So, you know, what happens to me in my life when instead of arguing with people, if they have a different opinion than me, I say, okay, you know what happens most time? Aside from my life getting better, they choose to take offense. It's the weirdest thing, but it helps shine a light on how crazy it is that we are so compulsively trying to get other people to agree with us.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that comes to mind was I had a person come to the support group years ago, and we had just done the Michael Rice talk on Course in Miracles, A New Beginning. And I was basically a novice about Course in Miracles. All I knew about it was one or two lectures from Dr. Michael Rice. I'd never read it. And so we, you know, had the lecture, and somebody said, oh, let me take that home. I said, all right, here's a copy. You can take it home. And she came back the next time loaded for bear, wanted to fight about this. Course in Miracles says there's no world. And I said, okay. She goes, what do you mean, okay? I said, okay, I'm not an expert in Course in Miracles. And I don't care if you want to think the world is real or not. We're just focused on the positive, constructive results we can implement or experience if we use these tools. And it was clear this person wanted to fight, to argue about being right. And when I just said, okay, you can be right, she chose anger, right? Okay. But it's the idea of becoming the baleen, right, that the whale has that just only takes what nourishes it and lets everything else flow through, or becoming the velvet curtain. Somebody wants to hit a handball against you and you're a solid wall, and then, you know, it hurts when it hits you, and then it bounces back at them, and it But if you become the velvet curtain, the ball just kind of gently gets absorbed into you and drops to the ground. You can do that with almost every argument that you have, even with yourself.
Oh, that's funny.
Oddly
enough.
That would
be a funny dialogue.
Well, that's what we're asking, right? That's essentially what happens when you stopped this morning and said, what am I making this mean?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Because when,
and I think...
When you put that phrase in there that says, what am I making this mean, it takes it away from just saying, what does this mean? As though it has some external validity.
Right. Right. Because I am making it mean something, and you might have made it mean something else. So it's all about my filters and perceptions and whatever that change that. And I'm just thinking the reason sometimes I want to hang on to my feeling is because I want to be right. That's exactly what's going on.
Exactly. And part of that is conditioning. Part of that is what Michael Rice was talking so much about yesterday with the power person dynamic. You know, if I came to believe this is how I survive, and this is a survival level mechanism, then that's a pattern that I need to be able to observe and question and eventually break, because my survival is very, very seldom related to my being right about some intellectual or emotional state.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think I read someplace that when you're in a conversation and like it's a challenging one, like someone is say challenging a statement I just made, that it can trigger that fight or flight response, and you can actually, you know, you get in, or I or whoever has that. You know, animal reaction, which also, so I'm saying that to say to myself that I do have to consciously know that and be able to flip that switch back. Like, it is not a threat to my safety if someone disagrees with me. And it is perfectly fine to say, okay, and let them have their belief. It's not a threat to me if they think something that's very opposite of what I think.
Exactly. Unless you believe it is, and then you can create the experience of it being a threat to you.
Right. Right. Yep. That's a conscious practice that I am one of many that I'm doing right now. And it's tricky because I absolutely am aware of an increased heart rate. My breathing starts going faster and it feels like conflict. Which feels like a threat to my safety, but it doesn't have to be. It totally doesn't have to be. There's no injury that's happening, only in my mind. I'm also thinking about this in relation to my child. You know, I am the mom, so I tell him this is what you do, and then I need to be right. And I'm saying this a little bit, you know, in a joking way. I'm noticing now, thinking about how often I argue my position, but there have been a few times when I have used that okay response, and he's like, what? just totally diffuses the whole thing. Like, it's okay. If that's what you want to think, okay. Like, cool. Maybe I'm wrong. Like, what do I know, really?
Yeah, it is an amazingly liberating response pattern. It helps me go into the questioning. It helps me, especially if I'm teaching my children, it helps me teach them to model for them being open and flexible and questioning.
And actually, also what I'm thinking about right now, and I notice, is that when I say okay, it actually unplugs that fight or flight response. Because I don't have to defend anything either. You know, I don't have to defend my rightness and go into that.
Exactly.
When I read, so, I mean, one word, two letters, pretty effective.
Amazing stuff. Well, is there anything else we can do to support you today?
Or anything else on your mind? No, that's all. That's what I wanted to say, and actually more than I thought I would say. So I appreciate the conversation.
Well, I appreciate the call. Thank you so much for listening and actually using the tools.
Thank you for putting them out there.
All right. Blessings. Area code 901.
Hello.
You're in
right.
the air. Who
and
do we have?
We are. And we are. That's what Paul was saying.
Area code 901. You're in the air.
You are to think the same way Jesus.
All right. Apparently they're in the conversation with somebody else. So, 563-999-3581. How can we support you? What's on your mind? We have 19 minutes left or thereabouts to talk about what might be of assistance. We have a support group coming up at 6:30 p.m. Central Time tonight where we can talk about things in even more detail. If you don't have a chance to call in now, we have archives full of the last 10-plus years of Internet shows discussing these tools. So how can we support you? What might be of assistance for you in either discussing a particular situation in your life that's troubling or discussing the application of one of the powerful tools that Michael and Jeannie Rice make available at whyagain.org? Part of the call from Jill was to say that, hey, you know, Dr. Tim, you had a positive influence without knowing it, and I'm sure it happens all over the place. Everybody who is coming from either a neutral place or a place where they're consciously aware of themselves as being the energy of creation extending in form, you're having positive ripple effects all throughout the world that your conscious logical mind will never know of. And that's what today's lesson from Course in Miracles was alluding to, this idea that you didn't create yourself. You don't even know when you were created. There's a lot more going on here than your conscious logical mind can be aware of. And your job is to be a messenger of the creation. And as you accept that message of creation and love for yourself, and then you give it away, then you get it back in spades and many times over. So as you understand that your conscious logical mind is not intended to be the driver of the bus, unless you're actually literally driving a car or a bus. But when it comes to deciding what your purpose is in life, at that primary purpose level that Dr. Michael Rice discusses, your primary purpose is the same as every other person. Your primary purpose is to develop and strengthen a viable, conscious, spiritual body, to have the awakening and the recognition that there's a lot more going on here than just the physical body. And as you awaken to that, and as you allow that to be part of what guides you, asking to be shown, tapping into that higher wisdom, some call it your unconscious, some call it Holy Spirit, some call it the Christ mind, but you tap into it and ask to be shown, and then trust that whatever unfolds is going to be of value to you and anyone else around you. Then as you watch your life unfold, you consciously become more consciously aware of miracles than you ever had before. And the thing about a miracle is it's an actuality that we were not aware of in one moment, and we become aware of it in the next moment. That's all a miracle is. A miracle is the flow of life. Course in Miracles might say that, you know, a miracle is merely the shift from the consciousness of fear to the consciousness of love. But essentially, you know, what we as human beings call miracles are actualities of life that we weren't aware of in one moment, and then we become aware of them and we say, oh my God, that's a miracle. But it's just the truth of life. It's just the reality of what is. And if you go into Krishnamurti's book, Flame of Attention, he talks so directly, so clearly about how, you know, we are so convoluted in our language and our thoughts that we think we have all, and we think about and we have all these conversations about what should be. And the actuality of life is there is only what is. And yet we spend all kinds of mental, emotional energy fighting for, discussing, beating ourselves up over what we think should be happening and what shouldn't be happening, when in truth, all there is what is. And the more we can be in direct observation of that, it's one of Krishnamurti's big ideas, is that the more we can be in constant questioning and living from direct observation, the better our lives get. The more we live from belief, the more we live from shoulds, what should be happening, and from the past and fear of the future, the worse our life gets, the worse our experience of life is. But the core of Krishnamurti's teachings is, all there is the truth of life. And this process of thought that we use to say, this is good, this is bad, this is wrong, this is right, this should be happening, this shouldn't be happening, is the mechanism by which we create the vast majority of our suffering, mental and emotional suffering. So the more we can learn to observe directly in the moment, the more we can learn to be living in the question, the more we can catch that process of thought and just observe how convoluted it gets and how unproductive it is, the better our life gets. And, of course, in this realm, we've got a very specific set of tools provided by Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice that help me cancel any goal I'm holding. Any goal, no matter how loving, no matter how positively stated, cancel it. Why would I cancel a loving and positively stated goal? Well, the reason I would do that is if I am holding that goal and I begin to experience a negative emotional state. And it's completely irrelevant why I'm feeling that negative emotional state or how I got into this. All I need to know is, if I don't like how I'm feeling, the most productive way to see how I'm creating that negative feeling is to identify the goal that's active in my mind in that moment and cancel the goal and then ask to be shown. Put my conscious logical mind aside for whatever brief period is necessary to clear the space in my mind, to let go of the goal and everything I think I want, my trifling treasures put away for now, and leave a clean and open space for something new to come when I ask to be shown. What's the hidden part of my mind that's actually creating my upset here? Another way is, as Jill was saying, I can ask, what am I making this situation mean? How am I using the flow of life in this moment as interpreted by me through this specific filter? How am I using that to create upset? Because that's the only thing that's ever created upset for me. The interpretations that I choose, or Michael Rice would say, that I decide upon through this automatic decision process that comes from my bloodline and all of the errors of traumas and false beliefs that I inherited, added to my life experiences. And when I end up putting that all aside and asking to be shown something else, then worlds open up to me. and I get a chance to experience the flow of life a little bit more accurately in that moment. So we have 8 minutes left. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. Or you can suggest a topic for the rest of this show or the beginning of next show. What's the next hour? What's on your mind? How can we be a support? Every time you call and press 1 on your phone, it gives us the opportunity to live into our intention a little bit more easily. The intention we have with this show, with the time we're investing in it, is to be of service. How can we be of service? What's a time in your life where something you said or did and you had no idea of its impact, but later on in your life it became clear? If you have a story like that, share it with us. If you have a hunch about how something that you thought was either neutral or unproductive might eventually have been productive for somebody, how you might have been in the web of life, in the dance of life, unwittingly a blessing to yourself and others, give us a call, 563-999-3581, and press 1. The odd part about about that process is that even in a situation where I am triggered and I am upset, I might be a teaching aid for someone, because I might be a demonstration of how not to do it. I might live out a cautionary tale, right? If I am, even if I'm teaching some great spiritual teachings, but I get triggered to upset and I refuse to acknowledge my upset, well, I'm not teaching in the positive way in that moment if I'm saying one thing and doing another. However, it might be just what somebody needs to wake up, because I might, my life and the way it starts to affect me negatively or my relationships negatively might serve as a cautionary tale for somebody else. It might be the wake-up call for them to say, wow, I don't want to be like that guy saying one thing and doing another. He really looks silly. Maybe I better get my act together and make sure that my words and actions are more in alignment. So even when we're not aware, even when we're feeling triggered, it's entirely possible for our existence in this physical plane to be a blessing to others. And it's entirely possible that most of the time that our lives are a blessing to others, we have no idea. Most of the time that our lives are a blessing to others, we're not aware of it. And there's a really good set of reasons for that, rooted in the fact that our conscious logical mind simply doesn't have the power. It doesn't have the memory, the bandwidth. It doesn't have the ability to perceive beyond its very limited range for sight and sound. And so, as the Course in Miracles lessons for today would point out, I want to extend that message of love, the message of creation. I want to give it away, because it's only as I give it away that I truly get the blessing, the value of it. So even if it just seems at times like I'm just faking it until I make it, as I connect with others, I get the benefit of the blessing. This is the opposite of a zero-sum game where I have 100 units of love, and if I give 70 of them away, I've only got 30 left. If I'm giving away the energy of love and creation, I am blessed with it. It's a cycle. If there is no separation between giving and receiving, we live in this time-bound world, so we have this sense, this impression through our senses that there is a delay and that there's time, but it's just a flow of life. And there is no separation between giving and receiving. And that's the essence of our lesson for today. You are, like it or not, whether you can wrap your mind around it or not, the fact of the matter is, you are among the ministers of creation, of love. And as you live your life, you, and whether you like to conceptualize it as you're being used by life, or you're in the flow of life, or you're connected to all life, any way you want to think about it, the fact of the matter is, you're not living in a vacuum. And if you want your life to be better, then choose better. And one of the better ways to choose is to ask to be shown, to put the conscious logical mind aside and refuse the temptation of the culture and whatever your family might have conditioned you to want to be right. Refuse that temptation. And as it says in every reality management worksheet, I cancel my need to be right. As I say in the forgiveness pattern when I do it, I cancel my need for anyone or anything to change, including myself. I put my conscious logical mind on the shelf for now, and I ask to be shown the hidden part of my own mind that's actually creating my upset. Because my pain, my suffering, my upset has only, always, and forever been created inside my mind, with my process of thought. Guy Finley points out to us so clearly, so often, the vast majority, if not all, of my mental and emotional upset is the product of the misapplication of my conscious logical thoughts. So, hopefully this has been of some value in a ripple effect that I will never see. And we have another day tomorrow. We have a support group tonight, if you're interested, from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central. All the information about joining there is available at mindshiftersacademy.org. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Chan. Just came in at the tail end. I only caught about the last 15 minutes of your show, so I apologize. I don't have any notes on that.
That's all right. I think we were just, I think we spent a lot of time expounding on the Course in Miracles lesson and talking about how the positive effects of our lives go well beyond what we'll ever discover. And then we had a lovely call from Jill, and whoever was 901, I turned on that microphone, and they were having a conversation with somebody else, and I couldn't get their attention.
Okay.
So we have not spoken with 901.
Okay, awesome.
All
Very
right, have
good.
A great show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Thursday, June the 3rd, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. While we're giving Michael time to get dialed in, I'll just let you know that I've been on the computer with India most of this morning, and we've about got the Android ready to submit to Google, and we're working on the iPhone, and then we'll submit that to Apple. So you'll need to update your apps on your phone, and hopefully all the glitches will be taken care of and it'll be working good. So that's what we're hoping for. And the new website's up, and I am still going through some of the glitches and broken links on that. And so hopefully that'll be finished by the end of today as well. And then I may take the weekend off. So anyway, we'll wait for Michael to get dialed in. The new website
I'm here, sweetie.
Is still... Oh, okay. The new website is still whyagain.org, and there are still lots of things that are the same, like the start here in the upper left corner, the bullseye. You'll have to scroll down a little bit because it's a little further down the page. But then we have a lot of new features, and I think it looks really good, and I'm excited about getting it all going and up and all the glitches out of it. So welcome, Michael.
Awesome. Hundreds of hours you spent on it. You and Susan. Thank you, Susan, for all the work. Thank you, Jeannie. All the technical upgrades. If you haven't looked at the new app on Why Is This Happening to Me, or pardon me, on Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, you'll see that Jeannie has arranged to add all of the commitments, my promise and my commitment to myself. They're now available.
They won't be able
to
see that yet.
Well.
We haven't submitted to Google yet.
Oh, that hasn't gone live yet. Oh, okay. Well, it's in there and it'll be coming soon. So pretty awesome. Just amazing. Your stamina, sweetie, getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to be able to talk to the folks in India, the technicians who are redoing it. The fact that you had to go out and find another set of technicians because the last ones disappeared. Just amazing, amazing work. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And so we look
you
forward
are
to
welcome.
The new pieces coming on in both places, as well as, you know, we've got all of the videos now on streaming service, so they're available. And the 48 tape Course in Miracles, which are primarily Course in Miracles tapes, are now available for stream purchase, and just lots of wonderful things happening. So, and of course, we have this little girl that is 32 months old now, pardon me, 32 months circling around the earth now, and her presence, her sweetness, her essence, what she brings to our lives, to the work even, is amazing. So lots of reasons for appreciation, and we're honored
Absolutely.
And delighted that you're here to be part of the conversation. And Miss Jeannie, you said that
there is already a hand,
a hand up,
and I think
let's say hello to the hand and I'll hold
Area off my code 901, you are on the air. 901, is this Brenda? Tim said he
sounds like car door opening.
Yeah, Tim said he tried to turn on the microphone earlier and that he couldn't get the attention. So I'm going to disconnect her right now.
Okay.
She'll call right back in, I'm sure.
She's been waiting, and we'll hope you'll get clear with her. It sounds like she's getting ready to drive. So it will be exciting to talk to you. It's been a long time since we've heard your voice, and hope all is well in your world. And do you have any other hands up, Jeannie?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go right into reading. Maybe by the time we get finished with this passage from Why Is This Happening to Me Again, Brenda will be back and ready to chat. That would be awesome. So we are on page 76, if you're reading along with us, of Why Is This Happening to Me Again and What You Can Do About It. And, of course, the focus is on the what you can do about it. The why question is kind of the booby prize, but when you've got the tools, that's where the real benefit starts to happen. And, you know, our vision, our work, our wish, our hope, our dream is that literally forgiveness becomes available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And I suspect that's going to happen by us hitting critical mass of people who are willing to step in, do the work, and shift the energetic patterns within the mind. We're going to be sending out later today for those who are part of the Codependence to Interdependence Intensive. I'm finishing up that new instruction worksheet for codependence, or pardon me, for the responsibility communication. So we'll make sure that gets on the website right away for anybody who wants that instruction set. It's the first time I've changed that in any significant way in about 20 years. So there's some new interesting information that's flowing into the codependence, or pardon me, the communication component of the codependence to interdependence communication practice. So we'll be sending that out later today. We'll ask everybody who's in the intensive to please watch that video again. Manja and Chuck doing responsibility communication and what opens up. And we're going to ask you to please watch it between now and Sunday afternoon and make notes on any questions or thoughts you have. We want to get the best refinements on this process. So we want every mind, if you would, to really participate, to really step up to the plate and watch that video. Jeannie put the link to it on the website yesterday. So even if you're not part of the intensive, you're welcome to step into that intensive video. It's about 2 hours and I think 13 minutes long. And it's facilitated, thank you, Manda, especially, a shift in some of the refinements of the responsibility communication process. And so you'll see those changes in the instruction set, the communication instructions, and you'll see that in the conversation we have on Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock Eastern time. For everybody who's part of the intensive, we would really love for you to be there. Of course, the video will be available to you afterward as well to watch, but it would be nice to have your live participation, your intelligence, your searching, your looking for understanding, your participation in the intensive to refine every question, every thought that we can in the communication, responsibility communication process. So I'm going to go back to page 76. I'm talking to this character, Richard, and we've been talking to him about the idea that in Aramaic, the word sin simply means off the mark, that it's actually an archery term. When you fire at the bullseye, you miss the bullseye. The energy's off the mark. When you put an energy that's off the mark into an energy system, the energy system has its integrity violated, and it begins to suffer. It begins to go into pain, warning signal to tell us that we're engaging in an energy that's off the mark. And ultimately, the upshot of sin, quote unquote, and it's very literal in the Aramaic, and it's not what the Greeks have presented as, it's just, God's threatening you that you're going to die for your sins. All it is physiology, physics, and information that if you put an energy, and I don't care, let's say I'm sitting here watching TV and a car drives in the driveway that's poorly tuned. Relative to my TV set, that car is emitting the frequency of sin. And all of a sudden, I'm going to have all kinds of wavy lines in my TV. It's going to be hard to hear. It's going to destroy the picture or at least damage it in some way. Every energy that you put into an energy system that's designed to incarnate love that is unlike love is going to do exactly the same thing to physiology. So in the ancient Aramaic, when they said the wages of sin is death, that wasn't threatening. That was just information. Here's what destroys physiology. Hostility and fear are frequencies that don't belong within us. And, if we all look back into our generations, how much hostility and fear has there been? How much conflict, strife, fight, divorce, crazy stuff, war. How much of that has gone on? And we were all receivers of that genetically. And again, another piece that's just physiology. When they said the sins of the father will be passed down to 3 and 4 generations, that wasn't God's going to get you for your parents' or their parents' sins. That was, we are energy systems. When the sperm impregnates the egg, it carries with it every frequency that man has engaged in through his whole bloodline into an egg that the woman who carries the egg has had impregnated or brought into her genes, her egg, the structure of her egg. And when the two join, every energy that never belonged within the system, because these frequencies are stored in every cell in the system, including the sperm and the egg, is going to be carried forward in the life of the newborn child. So those energetic frequencies are there. And of course, one of the objectives of this work is to recognize if that we're carrying the energetic patterns of the generations, it's time for us to really get to work and clean it up. I love what Jonas Salk said as a scientist, as a laboratory MD researcher. He says, the most important thing you can do is be a good ancestor. What does a good ancestor do? They pick up the tools, they do their work, they clean up their genes and pass on a higher level genetic structure than they got from their parents. Now, the world says, oh, it doesn't matter. Go around and screw anybody that you can. It doesn't matter what comes into your structure. And, you know, so you pass it on. So what? You know, beat on the next door neighbor, take their property, you know, engage in any kind of hate and fear you want. You know, what's it matter? You know, we're here for a good time. With no idea of what they're allowing and what they're moving forward. You look at the rage, the fear, the pain, the trauma, the greed, the hatred, the vengeance going on. Those are all, every person has that come into their driveway, so to speak, is just like the TV that's receiving the interfering frequencies from the car that's poorly tuned. Until the frequency of that poorly tuned car is removed from the structure, until it's shielded against, until it is forgiven, which literally forgiveness means remove, then that person is going to become the exhibitor of that disintegrated frequency, and it's going to lead ultimately to self-destruction. So we're looking to undo the self-destructive aspects of our historical input of our generations. Now, you can go back and get the sense from the Aramaic of the story about the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years. Let's look at the real message of that. The desert is a code word for the unconscious. They weren't talking about these several million people lost in a 35-square-mile area for 40 years. That wasn't it. I mean, obviously, these people were quite bright. Obviously, they knew a lot about astronomy. They knew where the sun rose and where the sun set, and they knew how to follow the sun for a couple of days to get out of a 35-square-mile area. It's silly to interpret that as they're lost in a hot, sandy place. But you watch the average person who grows up with no knowledge of the truth of how their own energy system works. Oh, yes, they accept it. If the TV comes in, the interfering frequency from the car comes into the TV, they'll do anything. They'll spend anything. They'll put any amount of effort to getting rid of that car and its interfering frequency so they can sit and be entertained by their TV. Of course, the entertainment they watch may be totally and completely off base for their energy systems, hate and fear and rage and guilt. And not knowing any better, they simply become a sponge to suck that energy in and end up living out of it and have no idea what they've done to themselves. You'll remember another piece that was given in the Aramaic. And again, this is all about physiology. He said, do not be conformed to the world. Do not be molded by the world, or you will end up moldy, is essentially the message. Be aware of what energetic patterns you engage in and maintain the integrity of your energy field so that you truly live as an actual human being. I'm offering to Richard this thought. Again, we're on the middle page 67. Richard, the wages of sin is death loses its threatening component when it's translated into the Aramaic language. It's not even a religious concept. It's a statement of simple physiology and a caution to be aware of the energies in which you engage. When you focus on energies that are inappropriate for your health, prosperity, or wholeness, you are living in quote-unquote sin. Off the mark. Bring enough disintegrative energy into any system, and it will fall apart and die. The result of error is self-destruction. In Aramaic, energies of hate, fear, anger, envy, guilt, jealousy, condemnation, gossip, and the like are understood to be disintegrative. They defile or violate the integrity of the quote-unquote temple, your body, and eventually, or at least what looks like to the eye, your body, and eventually produce death in the person who engages in them. If you entertain those energies in your mind, no matter how justified you may seem, you are the one who receives the original of that destructive energy, and the person you project it on only gets the carbon copy. This is what the scriptures were attempting to teach. So all you have to do to integrate into your energy system a disintegrative frequency is allow the thought to pass over your mind. I'd offer that every thought, every feeling, every reality engaged in by a person is stored holographically in every cell in their structure, again, including the sperm and the egg. If we realize that there's been too much of that done in our bloodline, then our work, should we choose to do it, is to acquire the tools for removing those things, freeing ourselves and the future generations from those qualities of energy. And the key thought that this page finishes off with is, the vessel in which negativity is stored always suffers more damage than the object upon which that negativity is poured. So again, practical understanding. It's just, here's how the energy system works, folks. It's time for us to clean it up. And we're here to support you. And you know, translating from the Aramaic, understanding the concepts that were offered in the Aramaic in the Greek world is just about impossible. There has to be an undoing of the errant Greek thought structure. You know, if you think in terms of relationship with creation, you look at the gods, so to speak, that the Greeks had. I mean, what an horrific pantheon. They raped their own mothers. They slaughtered their own children. They did their best to control and manipulate humans. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. Go back to Yeshua and his relationship with the Creator, which is not reflected in the Old Testament. The Old Testament is reflecting the world mind and its projections of hate and fear upon the Creator. If you listen to the man who brought correction, a new understanding, what you hear him talking about is, number one, not his father, not like somebody he owns or something he owns or that's exclusive to him, but he talks about our Creator, who is love, Greek translation words, whose good pleasure it is to give you the kingdom. And in the Aramaic, the words the kingdom of heaven, again, it's been totally mistranslated. You listen to me, it says, if somebody tells you that the kingdom of heaven is over there or over there or over there, believe them not, for it is here and now, and it is within you. And there's nothing religious about that. The translation of those words, it would be more accurate if we were to literally translate the word kingdom of heaven, we'd be talking about the community of love. And when we are members of a community of love and we do the work required to remove literally the deepest roots of hostility and fear, listen to that story about the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years. They're trying to get out of the desert into the promised land. How did they say that would happen? They said it would happen when the old generation died off. Now, again, open to misinterpretation. It doesn't mean that everybody in old physical bodies has to physically die because somehow they're inhibited from going in. That's the Greek explanation I've heard. What they're saying is that you look at the root of the word generation is genari. It means cause. All of the old causes from generations and generations and generations of errant thinking, feeling and creation have to be removed to step into what was called the promised land. What is the promised land? It's offered to everybody. It is designed to be conscious co-creation. We are designed as creators, and probably the greatest atrocity done to us through the ages and that we've bought into is that we've forgotten we're creators and we've always got somebody else to blame for our creation. But, of course, you'll notice if you've been through a particular creation 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the only one that was there. Every time it was produced by your mind, it is your creation. It is your projection. And forgiveness is about removing those projections, the projections of the generation, so we move out of the unconscious state, the desert, and move into the community of love that we're designed for. And, of course, the slightest offense, and, you know, pretty much anybody can make up a whole perceptual world about how somebody else is the reason I'm suffering. somebody else is the cause of my pain. The biggest lie that's ever been told. You notice? You're the only one that's been there every time. It's about you. Although you can deny ownership for your creative process, when you deny ownership for your creative process, you dissociate from the root of your creative process. Dissociating from the root means you create an unnatural condition called an unconscious mind. And then your whole, if you live in that belief, your whole perceptual mind functions out of the unconscious. And everything that comes up is a reflection of the unconscious. That's why people say, no, that's got nothing. Well, yes, I'm feeling it. Well, yeah, it happened 2 weeks ago and 10 weeks ago and 200 weeks ago and 2,000 weeks ago, but it's not my fault. Dissociation, hiding it, creating an unconscious, refusing to become conscious of the self-destructive mode that the world has helped us to move into. And forgiveness, the opposite of what the Greeks taught, has nothing to do with, I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. Forgiveness is the tool with which, if my unconscious is producing some form of untoward energy, I reach into the root of that untoward energy and I remove it. I forgive it. I don't let somebody else off the hook for it. I literally learn how to access it within myself and remove it from my storage system, which is called the body-mind unit. Every cell in the body functions as a brain cell. Every cell holds information. And where disintegrative information is stored, that tissue is in the process of disintegrating. We're looking to restore health, aliveness, and thriving to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. Because we all deserve it, and we were all born for it. So I hope that makes sense for everybody. And if there are any questions, let's see if Brenda's back with us. Say hello. Hope she is. I haven't heard her voice in a while. Are you there, Jean?
She is on the switchboard, but she has not pressed one. So I don't know if that means she can't talk right now. But Brenda, if your hand was up earlier and we attempted to turn your mic on and sounded like you were getting in the car or something. So if you are in a place where you can talk, we would love to hear from you. So if you would press one, that'll let me know that you are available to chat. Otherwise, we don't have any hands up, no questions in the chat room, and we have 37 minutes. So we have lots of time.
Well, we've laid a foundation that, especially if there's anybody new to the show or anybody in the practice, should probably bring out lots of questions. So if I were in your hometown today and you had come to my presentation, which I just did the last 20 or so minutes, and I had walked down off the stage, you know, I'm at your local library or your local university or your local church or your local prison, and you're there in the audience, I'm walking down off the stage, what would you come over and say to me? Michael, what about, or how does
we have
this
a hand
work?
Up.
Great. Let's say hello.
It's area code 610, I believe. This is Miss Susan.
Hi, it is. And I have a danger of being interrupted because there's a workman in the house, and I'm at my son's sort of babysitting the house. And anyway, I would love to have you create with me a mind shifter for my grandson, Charlie. He has this anxiety disorder, as I've told you, and what he does is he becomes consumed with something that happened with this professor, and he's been told by his doctor to name the OCD activity, and he has named it the flea. And he says, for all of us around Charlie, when Charlie starts obsessing and needing reassurance, we are supposed to say, we want to talk to Charlie, but not the flea. We can't talk to the flea or give you any reassurance about the flea. And Charlie understands that. And there are times when he's lucid and he'll say, okay, in my healthy mind, I can tell you that this and this and this is really this and this and this. And he's absolutely spot on, totally right. But then he loses track of that, and his anxiety is so great that the flea takes over. And I would love, I don't even know if he'll do this. He's got this resistance about using worksheets or any of my tools because he's, I guess, because I'm, well, I don't know why. In any case, I'd love to give him a mind shifter.
Perfect. Great idea. So how about I, comma, Charlie, comma.
Okay.
I'm so skilled at healing my flea, quote unquote.
Okay.
That every time it surfaces, I remember to breathe, comma, connect with love, comma, dissolve its presence in my mind.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. It's very strange.
So just,
and I'm, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
It's strange that he appears to be absolutely highly functional and fine at school. And I'll ask him, how was the day? I don't even want to remind him about the flea, but he'll say, oh, it was okay. And then he'll say, I was thinking about the flea issues a lot. He's also a fantastic baseball player, and he pitches almost, he pitched 9 innings the other day, and they won the first game of the season because they finally put him in. He's young, and they didn't utilize him. They always use upperclassmen. He won them the game, and he seemed so centered and focused and on and good, but he said he hadn't enjoyed himself. And then he sang a concert, and he was clapping and stomping and singing the way they all do. It was a big outdoor concert. I asked him how he was, and he said same thing. He said, I couldn't enjoy it. And he says that this professor is the one who is taking away his enjoyment. And I hear people coming, so I may have to stop talking for a moment. Hang on one second.
Well,
no, they're just coming and going. Yeah, just to see, I think that's a wonderful mind shifter, but I just wanted to give you an idea of how intense this is for him.
Got it. So if I were talking to him, I would explain the idea of this body-mind unit being energy,
mm-hmm.
and that relative to it, there's integrative energy and disintegrative. And the integrative and disintegrative energies that he wants to become aware of are
mm-hmm.
thoughts. And it is his thought disorders, the disintegrative energies of thoughts, not the professor that take away his pleasure and his joy.
Yeah.
But that is a natural state when the truth of who he is, and you've maybe done this with him before, but ask him to think about holding a newborn, tap into the essence of the newborn, or if he's never been near that experience, maybe you as Orb and Trusted could talk about, you know, I can remember the first time I held you and what an awesome presence of love you were. And
mm-hmm.
what I know is that's still true about you, but there's some thought disorders that come in that disturb that state.
Mm-hmm.
And that when he can embrace those thought disorders and now, who knows where they come from? Maybe they're genetic. Maybe they're from experiences in childhood or in utero or what have you. It really doesn't matter where they're from. But to perhaps introduce him to the love exchange exercise, do that
mm-hmm.
with him regularly, get him to where he's in the practice of holding love, conscious, active, and present, maybe trusting your words as your recall, your remembrance, and your knowledge of who he is. And that which he is capable of dissolving that disintegrative energy. Maybe even use the example I used earlier of, you know, the car that's not tuned properly comes in the driveway, sets up an interfering energy, and now television is ruined. Television actually is doing just fine. You know, the signals are there, everything is wonderful, but there's this interfering energy.
Yeah,
and if he can set up a shield around the spark plug that's broken in the car that's setting up this, you know, this disturbing frequency, he's going to have a clear picture of television and sound. And when he can start to embrace from a space of love and be in the practice of functioning as love, these thought disorders, they'll tend to just start to disappear. And he will become a happy camper.
That's all good. I scribbled this. I'm going to write it down and keep it in my pocket for when we're together and we have good bouts of time because we're driving and everything. So, you know, a lot back and forth
and,
to school. And, so.
And, you know, perhaps when you've got a space to chat with him about it, just text myself or Jeannie message says, I'm starting to talk with Charlie and we'll connect and hold the space.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you.
And I know that everybody in the community will as well.
Yeah, you know, he has a good friend, which he's such an introvert that he didn't have a friend, but he's got a good friend who's a little bit quirky, just what we need, you know. They get along great. It's a bright, sensitive boy who has been diagnosed with ADHD. And I don't know how that dovetails with Charlie's thinking processes, but it's a kid who would understand aberrations. Anyway, great boy. So I know
well,
there's a lot of help.
Perhaps he needs this explanation to both of them. And he'll have his friend
yeah,
to support him in remembering it.
That's a great idea. Okay, well, thank you so much. Has the other woman called in? Because that was what I needed, and I've got it down, Michael. Thanks.
Sweet. And we'll be holding the space, young lady.
Thanks.
And Jeannie, has Brenda called?
She's back in, but she does not have her hand up, so she must not be where she can talk.
Okay.
So,
well, any other
and Bob
for
in
you?
The chat room,
Susan?
Bob says, no one else has power over me. And I said, only what we give them credit for, and that's false credit.
Hey, Bob, good to hear your voice. Thanks for joining and holding the space.
So we have 26 minutes. Somebody press 1.
Any other thoughts for you, Susan?
You hear me? Hold on, I had muted her. Hold on. That's okay. I'm back on now. Am I there?
You're loud and clear.
Okay, good. Well, it's been a very interesting 3 days, and it coincides with Jeannie's birthday, too. I turned 77, and then we had our 52nd, 53rd wedding anniversary, and then I got into a car accident. All three.
Oh, no.
The car accident was very stupid, but I want to say this on the radio show. The traffic was very heavy on a very weird highway that we all don't like very much. And two boys. And I knew that I would be late because the traffic was practically not moving at all. So I'm moving slowly ahead, and everybody's moving slowly ahead. I whip out my iPhone and try to type in the name of the school to see how bad the traffic was on the GPS. What did I do? Run into the truck right in front of me. It was a great big truck. There was no damage to the truck, but my whole front end has been pushed in such a way that I'm about to take the car in and have learned the bad news. Nobody was hurt, but the amazing thing was it was actually I'm grateful for it because I thought here's the gentlest way I can be taught not to do anything on my phone when I'm driving. Are you all listening on the radio show? Don't think
that's a
you
good
can
one.
Do it. Yeah.
don't do it. It's going to be tempting, and everybody does it, or most people do, and I didn't get away with it. Well, the truck driver was an angel. He came around. He made sure I could get out of the car on the safe side. He smelled things to make sure there were no leaks. He looked under. We couldn't open the hood. It was so smashed against itself. He said, the car appears to be functioning. Even the headlights are on, so it looks as if you can keep going. Are you okay? And we exchanged information. And then two girls were sitting beside me. I mean, we were at a standstill, and these young women opened the door, opened the window, and said, are you okay? And I said, I'm fine, except disgusted with myself. And they said, I know, it happens to the best of us. God bless you and have a great day. And I thought, holy crap, angels all over the place. So then I get to the school. Yeah, I mean, amazing. So I thought, okay, God, if you had to teach me a lesson, this was about the best way. Nobody in the car except me, no dog even. So I was just appreciating how this might have been. Of course, this is just a way of looking at things. It might have been a lot worse some other time. I'm going to be so careful.
Like,
and then
life.
These two boys. What'd you say?
Kind of like life. It's a way of looking at things.
Yeah.
I could look through the filter of fear and self-condemnation and self-revenge, and it could have been a
mm-hmm.
disaster. Or I could look at it through Rockman, be gentle with myself, and let go of that whole thought disorder. I mean, that's one of the major points of the work.
True, and I was thinking about the work, even being amazed that I didn't get mad. I was reprimanding myself for being careless, but it wasn't like I was hitting my head against the windshield, which is something I used to do. I used to hit my head with my fist as hard as I could when I was mad at myself. There was no slightest impulse to do this. And then
that's
I get
the
to the
fruit of
school
your work, young lady.
I know it, Michael. It's true. Then I get to the school and the boys come and I say, boys, come around the front. Take a look at this. I said, this is something I did that I'm embarrassed about, but you don't do it. And that is driving and looking at your phone, even for a second. I said, do not do it. And then the young man, it's Charlie and his good friend I was telling you about. The good friend gets in the car and he says, Orb, you needn't worry. I read statistics. A person who's been in an accident is the safest driver on the road for about 3 weeks after the accident. My first thought was 3 weeks, only 3 weeks. But the other one was that he was spouting information, trying to help me feel better by being his walking encyclopedia self. Such an adorable boy. So anyway, yeah. So that's just a little teeny report. I wasn't going to give that, but since nobody's calling in, I thought I would. Because the work bears fruit all over the place, even when unexpected things happen. So
you got it. That's it. Very nice. That's awesome.
Thanks. I think so too.
And the fact that you model that in front of those boys is another piece of the work that will have an impact over time.
What did I model? You mean I told them to be careful? Yeah, that was...
Being loving,
they didn't,
gentle,
yeah,
and respectful with yourself. I mean, think about it. When you were that age and an adult in your field had done something that they considered worthy of self-condemnation over, what was modeled for you?
Yeah.
You mean things like hitting yourself in the head as hard as you could?
Well, my mom and dad never did that, but I know what you're saying. Yeah. Just the anger response was very much one of the top choices we had to how to respond. Yeah.
All in the way you choose to perceive. Go back to the practicality of Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and they asked him, what's most important to human existence? He said, have Rachma. it's how we get to be human. And, you know, I know how you would have processed that, and it would have been in a non-human way. And
yeah.
The opening to just be human in that is like, it changes the world.
Yeah.
So thank you.
That reminds me of a wonderful article I read in the New York Times today about Israel and Palestine. And I know we don't need to get into politics here, but basically what this guy is, Nicholas Kristof, he's very good. He just said, whatever we've been doing hasn't been working. And he showed some examples of, like, Margaret Thatcher not reacting to an assault from some country and just being disappointed but continuing on in a productive way without retaliation. And he said, we must take a different way. It's like the Course in Miracles has got to be a better way. That's all he said. He said, yes, there are atrocities on both sides, and there are reasons on both sides. We have to leave the whole model and start having dialogues with one another.
Choose aim again.
For peace. Yeah, aim for peace on both sides, no matter what. Enough time has passed, enough damage has been done. I talk to friends on both sides because we run this refugee center, and we have lots of Palestinians, Afghanis, you know, Iran, Iraq, and we hear horrific stories about what Israel has done, but Israel has the same stories, and so they have to stop, that's all. So that was, if you wanted to look that up, it's an editorial, and it's just really good. Nicholas Kristof. Very fast.
I'll look at it.
Along those lines, there is a movie that Michael and I'm trying to write at the same time his name, Nicholas Kristof. There's a movie called The Other Son. It's a 2012 movie, and it's about two young men. One is Israeli and one is Palestinian. And they find out by accident that they were switched at birth. And they're like 18, 19 years old, and so they want to meet the other family. And the fathers are resistant. The mothers want to meet the other son. They don't want to take the son away because they've raised this one for 19 years. You know, they want to keep the one they have, but they would like to meet the one that they actually gave birth to. And the trauma and turmoil that they go through trying to get across the border from one to the other, you know, and just the emotional stuff of the families, and it's really powerful. I'll put a link to that in the notes today as well.
Oh, well, wonderful. I've heard of that movie. I've never seen it. What a gorgeous story. We should all watch it right now. Oh.
Powerful.
All right. Thank you for listening to all that.
Well, I have personally been kind of on the edge of a lot of emotion for a couple of days. And you just opened
like
it
a
up.
Boat? Oh, Michael. Breathing with you, as you say, I'm actually...
Thank you. Time for us to put an end to suffering in the world.
No kidding.
Many people who are willing to do their work and move into a different space. So.
Susan, I was typing in Nicholas Kristof's name, and I didn't get the name of the article or whatever. Do you have that?
I don't. It's at home. His name is K-R-I-S-T-O-F-F.
Two Fs, okay.
Or maybe it's one. Anyway, that should get you there. I'm not sure. But it's today's New York Times.
Oh, okay.
Op-ed. You got it?
Yep.
Yeah. It's not long.
Were my criticisms of Israel fair?
Yeah. He's written a lot about Israel and Palestine.
and
it's
hard
to talk.
Yeah, it's hard to talk to. I have one Jewish friend in town who we used to talk, but we don't anymore because he's just so far and so easily inflamed, filled with a sense of injustice and victimhood and all that stuff. And it appears that the Palestinians are less so, but of course Hamas is acting vengefully and Israel is acting vengefully, and they both say the other one started it, and who knows who started it. It's just irrelevant at this point. But that movie, that's the thing. We need to live in each other's lives to the point where the distinctions don't mean anything. So, yeah, it's kind of exhausting. You okay, Michael?
Michael? Maybe I need to go in and check on him.
Whoa.
No, I'm okay. I just had my mute button on, sweetie.
Oh, okay.
I was starting to say, as I was looking up Christoph's article, another thought occurred, and I'm not remembering who it was. It might have been Gandhi who said, I'm not remembering exactly the numbers, but with one person making that change affects the lives of a million.
Mm-hmm.
And this BBC article talks about how nonviolent protests are twice as likely to succeed than armed conflicts are. And that threshold of about 3.5% of the population, that action has never failed to bring about change.
Well, Duff article talks about how sometimes it's slow, but taking the more passive, loving, allowing stance ends up being what's needed. In most cases, peace came eventually, whereas peace won't come this way, no matter how much fighting. It just won't.
Yep. It's a pretty obvious piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's an interesting article. I'm just kind of, you know, flipping through it, but 3.5% is what they're saying it takes of the population to make that mind energy shift.
Wow. Wow. I'd love to think it's happening. There's so much going on in that. So many people coming forward with the same kind of message, using different words somewhat, and sometimes so similar it's mind-blowing.
They're saying that there's some research done at Harvard by a political scientist named Erica Chenoweth. And she says that research is confirming that civil disobedience is not the only moral choice. Pardon me, is not only the moral choice, but it is also the most powerful way of shaping world politics by a long
mm-hmm.
shot.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and even the peaceful
moving
marches,
in the right direction.
Yeah, even the peaceful marches, we need all of us to be conscious to go there with true wish for peace and practicing what Pierre Pradovan does, the gentle art of blessing, over and over and over.
Yeah. 'Cause
a lot of people go to peace marches aren't that peaceful; they're yelling things,
right.
And so. That needs cleaning up a bit, too, I think.
Again, it's all back to how do you live a human life? You've got to start with Rachma, if that isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
This woman, Chenoweth, at Harvard, says that when she initially started her research on this idea, that she was cynical that nonviolent action can be more powerful than armed conflict. She's a PhD student at the University of Colorado.
Those guys are calling me, so I'm going to hang up.
Okay, be blessed. We appreciate you. Nice work.
Thank you, Michael. Okay, bye.
Michael, I brought Erica Chenoweth up on the website, but what article is it? And I'll note it.
It's bbc.com.
Oh, I'm just actually on her website.
Yeah. BBC.com. It only takes 3.5% of people to change the world. The quote, 3.5% rule, unquote, how a small minority can change the world.
Under BBC, I'm not finding it. I'll get it after.
I'll send you a link for you.
Okay. All right. So we have 8 minutes. We can do a quick conversation. What's your quick question? Everybody always says that.
Sophie, I'll turn this around. What are your thoughts on this whole conversation? What's moving for you? How can we support you? Okay, that link is in your text. I should email it to you tonight. It'll be easier for you that way.
Okay, thanks.
I'll email it.
Yeah, as long as it is there.
Yeah.
All right. So press 1. It has a question.
There you go.
Thank you.
So we're down to just a few minutes. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Call the number. It's 563.
You disappeared. 563-999-3581.
3581. We'll be having a conversation.
I'll put a request out there. Today is really busy for me, but perhaps maybe sometime tomorrow or Saturday would probably be even better. Somebody who has an iPhone that could give me a 10-minute lesson on what some of these buttons do. We got a new iPhone just so that I could test the app and everything, and I was, really struggling this morning trying to figure out even how to put Skype on it, and I did finally get that. But there's some buttons that I totally do not understand. If somebody who has an iPhone and is very familiar with it would call me and or email me either one, and I'll call you back. But I would love to have a 10 or 15-minute lesson on what some of these things do. I know I could go into the phone store and get them to tell me, but
You have YouTube. You have YouTube University, too, remember?
That's true. That's true, except I've got both computers tied up with – one of them's tied up with the website, and the other one's tied up with India, and to switch off of it, anyway. And maybe it's too much to even go there right now.
You have a tablet. And we have about 5 minutes left. So who has a thought for us? What's on your mind? And if there are no thoughts in anyone's mind at this moment, that there is room for discussion for them, let's just take 5 minutes and get quiet together. Let's just cultivate this condition of the mind that Yeshua referred to as Rachma. So I'm just going to invite you to allow yourself to take a couple of deep breaths and imagine holding yourself as a newborn child. I mean, literally, imagine you've just come out of the womb and you're able to hold yourself and tap tap into your essential nature. There is a mind in you as a newborn, which the ancients called the mind of Christ, the mind of love, the presence of love, is in you. Take a moment, individually and collectively, to tap into that mind. And as you breathe, you allow each breath to fill the space of your form with the active presence of love. In fact, let me share with you a visual for doing that. A daughter, just turning 40 now, was birthed at home. And as she delivered into my hands, one of the most profound moments of my life, she opened her eyes. Crystal clear focus, looked in my eyes and grinned. Imagine this newborn that you are coming into the hands of the adult who catches you. You are there pure in the presence of love, and you open your eyes. And when you do, you extend that love to the person who's giving birth to you and the person who's catching you. Allow yourself to be fully conscious of how pure that state of being is. Because the mind of love is in you. And as you become aware more and more of that presence in you, you realize that perhaps it's time for you to cultivate a deeper relationship with this part of yourself that is so powerful. In fact, resolve to spend time each day in this state, fully connected to the presence of love. And realizing, making real the fact that that is who you are. That is who the person you perhaps have called the enemy is. And as you cultivate that presence of love in you, those brain cells that contain such generational concepts as enemy and conflict, in the presence of love, simply begin to dissolve and you are freed of them. And as you choose love, you wake up that love in everyone, because the nature of every one of us is the same, even if we have lost awareness of it. And as you choose that, you strengthen that in yourself and literally everybody else in the world. Because all matter is transparent to that presence of love. Joining me in being the space.